You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com.
All right, here we go, everyone. Monday Night Magic. Let's build that energy. Reverend James, hit the music. Welcome to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, exploring the magical world around us only on the LMC Radio Network. There are so many fantastic, exciting, and curious things that make up this world we share. Come join us as we explore the spiritual, magical, and wondrous phenomena that enrich our souls and bring color to our days. I am your announcer, Reverend James of FolkConjure.com, located in Western North Carolina. This week, we welcome our special guest, the fabulous Doc Murphy of RootDocMurphy.com in Paganistan and the Twin Cities, bringing us on a discussion on My Magic Didn't Work, or Did It? In just a moment, we'll be joined by our host, Reverend Art of FolkConjure.com in North Carolina, and our guest, Doc Murphy. Make sure you're logged into Blog Talk Radio and join in the discussion via the chat. Now let's catch up with our host, Reverend Art. Take it away.
Thank you, Reverend James, and welcome everyone yet again to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, your Monday night stop for things fabulous. That being said, it is Monday yet again. Make sure you take your time, go out to the Hoodoo Psychics Facebook page and like their Magic Mondays post, drop a comment on there, and get entered to win your free 15-minute reading with the hoodoo psychic of your choice. Many of us are out there and ready to provide that enlightenment. So don't miss out. Go on over, drop your comment, and get entered to win. All right. So here we are again, yet again. And I'm actually having difficulty kind of putting sentences together right now. At first, I thought it was, you know, a little bit because I'm coffeeed up pretty well, but to have Doc Murphy back with us yet again is always so fantastic. But before we jump into the show for today, how are things in your neck of the woods, Reverend James, which is literally right above my head right now?
I was just about to say that's our neck of the woods, but... Well, if you listen to the Hoodoo Root Work Hour over on the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Root Work Hour yesterday, then you know that I've been doing a lot of vigil candle work with our Candle Ministry at folkfaithministries.com. And I've also been doing a lot of work with influence work and love work and healing work. Those are the three things that have been kind of coming up with all of my clients here lately. I'm not really sure how all of it ties together, but that's what it is. And also this past weekend, we got to meet up with the fabulous, Elle Duval. If you don't know her, I encourage you to go check her out at the readersandrootworkers.org website, the AIR website. She's a great reader. She, you know, gave us a little bit of a sneak peek at the way she reads, and it's very interesting, and she's very succinct, and she's very blunt. So if you haven't met her, if you feel a calling to work with her, I highly encourage it.
You know, it really was a great weekend visiting and getting to know Elle. So many wonderful folks comprise AIR. It's really a great organization. Definitely, personally, very happy to be a part of it. Readersandrootworkers.org, check it out. It's not just a listing of the members of AIR, but also a very curated website full of all kinds of information on divinations and spirits and just gods, goddesses. The information there is intense, deftly curated by Miss Kat Ironwood and the tech team that gets together every Tuesday afternoon to make sure that they put out a new page every week. A lot of great stuff there. But without further ado, welcome back, Doc Murphy. When I mentioned last week that you were coming back, the outpouring of excitement was palpable.
Oh, how sweet. It is so good to be back, Reverend Art and Reverend James. I'm so happy to be back. I'm really flattered that people enjoy our shows and enjoy our conversations. And I enjoy that we can just spend this hour and a half really getting into the meat and potatoes of something that we all love, which is, you know, magic and spirituality and cultures of the world. And happy to be back. Looking forward to it.
You know, we have the topic today really excites me. Can't wait to jump into that. But I know that there's been a lot going on in the world of Paganistan, and you know, I'll let you make the announcements. 403C, all of us. Or 503. I lost the number. I'm so excited I can't even remember the number right
501
now. 501C3.
Yeah. Well, the first thing I did was I just posted in the chat the newly launched website for Hay River Fire Haven, which is the pagan church, that land-based church that I'm one of the incorporators with. And we are plotting our way to get another 501c3 for that. We've had several events. We're starting working on things like curriculum and guest camping and that sort of thing. So if folks
wow.
are of a pagan or earth reverent of any past mindset, and you're kind of in the Twin Cities, Wisconsin, upper Midwest kind of area, worth a visit and to reach out to us. So I went ahead and I put a link to the website there. The our web gods and goddesses did a beautiful job, and they're still putting content up and making things shoppable. So check it out. That's what's been eating up my weekends these last few months, is running out here to do events and to camp and to do things, which I'm loving doing. And the other big news is that I think we spoke about it last time. I'm part of the Cultural Archive of Modern Paganism acronym CAMP, which now we officially became a 501c3 nonprofit. Last time I was on the show, And we got word a few weeks ago that we just received another research grant, this one more focused on my research partner's kind of archive work. And we're going to be submitting another grant proposal in about a week. We're getting back on the horse and getting back into doing pagan archive and historical research again. And I've already spoken to my research partner, Velvet Capone, and she said she'd be happy to come onto the show and we can talk about camp sometime. And you'll be amazed at the kind of work that she does as well. I think we're a good team research-wise. And but that's also been kind of gobbling up my brain. So, the rigmarole of like personal stuff that you got to keep balanced and magical stuff. A very slight, small, gentle building of clientele with readings and root work, which has also been keeping me busy. Is this where we let people in on like the big secret that spell work and root work is really fun? It's really, really fun to get creative for a divine purpose. And create spell work and encourage other people to do their spell work. Magical coaching is a lot of fun, too. So magic is fun. We blew the secret. There you go.
Now, you know, personally, you know, I'm very much intrigued by and kind of enlivened by the existence of camp. And you know, very happy to share as much information and support as I can for this project. You know, the preservation of folk magic, folk practices, paganism, et cetera, and it's so important. Reverend James and I actually did a show not too long ago here on Mystics and Mages about the importance of preserving folk magic. That was inspired by our appearance at the Folk Magic Festival, the Tennessee Folk Magic Festival, hosted by another pair of wonderful AIR members, Reverend Roy and Papa G there in Nashville, Tennessee. It was a wonderful day. So they put out such a wonderful event that if anyone is ever in that region, when it's going on, it's definitely worth the stop. They fill up several parking lots throughout the course of the day. But you know, camp is kind of, outside of academia, camp is kind of a unique organization, and truly, you know, is something that all of us in the spiritual metaphysical communities should be supporting in some way, at least in my opinion.
Thank you.
To really kind of build that knowledge and the conciseness to make sure that you know, things don't just fade away into obscurity,
that's the idea. You know, I think a lot of the reason that we got the first research grant that we did is that we made the argument that, like, look, our elders are eldering. We have this amazing generations long wisdom that's not written down in books that has flavored the culture and the community here and around the country in pagan communities that really needs to be preserved. I mean, relying only on kind of what's written down is a portion of the story. And so being able to get not only the oral histories, which is what I'm collecting, but the documents and the documents that aren't, you know, the published books, you know, things like the personal correspondences, the letters, the newsletters from organizations, the rags that were made on kitchen tables with staples, postcards, contracts, all those things that show up in the unofficial kind of written record is what my research partner is focused on. And that's a whole other, you know, portion of the story too. So I knew when I started my research as a spry young grad student that there was something unique and special and amazing about this culture, and it's true, and it only gets more amazing. So I feel very lucky that I am working with the research partner that I am, and I'm thrilled that we're now a 501c3 and we've got our own board, and the decisions are made quickly and cleanly and fast, and we are just a real productive group. And like I said, we've got a fundraising event already coming up on the 20th that's going to be live streamed. So I'll keep you guys in the loop on that when that comes. And folks can watch. It'll be me being Doc Murphy, like really, like Professor Doc Murphy, you know. So interviewing elders live about some of the historical importance of Paganistan, and it's going to be very cool. So,
you know, and that's one of the biggest things, I think, is really preserving those unique items, the notebooks, the postcards, the, you know, offhanded comments written down on a napkin somewhere, you know,
mm-hmm.
these things so easily and quickly can disappear.
Yes.
And, you know, and several folks in the chat are mentioning about, you know, there are several museums kind of dedicated to different aspects of paganism, spell casting, witchcraft, what have you.
Yeah, yeah.
They kind of dot the landscape. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a little different because we have to stress to people that an archive is not the same as a museum. You know, the purposes of museums are for, you know, the public to interact and for display and for that sort of interaction with history. Archive processes are different. It really is about preservation, and as my research partner likes to joke, you know, the archivist tries as little as possible to let you check things out so they don't get damaged. But because we're digitizing, or it's going to be a digital archive eventually, we want people to be able to kind of be able to hop online and be able to look at the history and research and the media of the community around the country and be able to have that access to it. And then that's the beauty of digitizing an archive, is that people can absorb the information that they need, but the actual objects remain preserved. So it's exciting. So an archive is a little bit different than a museum in that sense, but, you know, all things are off when you got the digital realm on your side. So
It's truly a wonderful, wonderful project that, you know, I honestly, having gotten to know you over the past couple years, I really can't think of somebody better to be involved in this project, because you have a very dogged sense about getting down and into these things and really maintaining their truth. And I think that's so important with this, is because you do it without bias. You really do. And so few people have that ability when they are compiling information, when they are looking even for information, where, you know, it seems like there's always that little bit of peppering of personal biases that works its way in. But you really keep it true to itself. And once CAMP is in a position to unveil this archive, I think really we talk about it and we wonder, but I think everybody's really going to be blown away.
We're excited. We have a logo now. and not too much longer, we're going to have an actual like website, even if it's just one page that says, here, press this button and donate here. But we're moving along. We're going to be thinking in terms of the social medias and the outreach and education and that sort of thing while we're working on this preservation. But right now, it's a very good relationship with the Minnesota Historical Society, which we're very excited about. And like I said, it just feels good to be back on the horse doing research again, you know, where you can put your, you know, biases and your issues kind of on a shelf for a while and just dig into what's there and what the stories are and not be in a position to condone or condemn or have an opinion about it. It's just get the data and get it, you know, documented and make sure it's preserved. And then interpretation will be what it is when people read it, you know. But we're about making sure that we get the information and we get it preserved. And it's just, we're excited. And yeah. And thank you so much for your support and for wanting to talk about it. Like I said, it's so there will be plenty more to come. We're going to be working hard on this. So.
Well, we'll definitely have to set some time aside and really get into the nitty gritty of camp once you and your compatriots are ready to start pulling back that veil a little bit for the rest of us. Really excited to assist in any way that myself or Reverend James and I can with Mystics and Mages as well, to really get that word out there. And
thank you so much.
And really, you're kind of in the perfect place too. I've been reading about Paganistan in the history, and it's such a kind of a phenomenal area and region that you're in. It's like the planets and the stars and the moons and everything aligns just right for this to come together. And you know what? While I'm thinking about it, I have to share this because I've ordered it. It's on its way to me. Dropping a link in the chat for the Prodea Cookbook, Good Food
Yay!
And Traditions from Paganistan's Oldest Coven. I can't wait to get this book.
You're going to enjoy that so much. Well, first off, I know a lot of these folks. One of the members of Prodea, one of the co-authors, Stephen Posh, is the man who coined the word Paganistan. He did it in kind of a poetic moment, and it's stuck as our nickname for the community. So he is credited with creating the word Paganistan. Prodea, I just saw Stephen the other day. Prodea has been a coven that's been in existence for 40-plus years, which is a family. I mean, that's just like unheard of, but they really are. And all the recipes in the cookbook are traditions that their coven has held. I have actually been invited to dinner for fall equinox and eaten with Prodea, and boy, they fill you full of food. They beat the heathens on that one. I was officially the most food fed to an anthropologist. But it was great because, you know, between each course, they would sing a song. And that's part of their tradition is that, you know, they get together, they do a lot of singing and ritual. And then it's this the soup course and then a song and then the dinner and then the song. And so everything that's in the Prodea cookbook from Prodea Coven in Paganistan comes from their own traditions that they've created. And so that's a real gem. That book is a real cultural gem.
You know, if anybody that's listened to the show for any amount of time knows how much I love the book Hoodoo Food, which has really become kind of a staple in our kitchen all year long. It started out, you know, doing New Year's Eve dinners, but throughout the course of the year, we regularly dip in and do some magical cooking. So I'm really excited. And you know what? There's the link to Hoodoo Food. Put together by the auxiliary of the Missionary Independent Spiritual Church. Just two books everybody needs to have in their pantry and ready to go.
You got it.
You know what?
Every kitchen witch should have Hoodoo Food and the Prodea Cookbook on their shelf.
How about it? Well, you know, I think we're at a good point for some messages from our sponsors.
All righty.
How about it, Reverend James?
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rework Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurement, Sundays 3 to 4:30, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays 4 to 5:30, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Instant Indication, Tuesdays, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Deborah Voigt, Tuesdays 4 to 5, and The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, in syndication, Thursdays. All time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
Support for this program is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com. And by the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners located online at readersandrootworkers.org. And by Hoodoo Psychics, the first psychic line run entirely by Hoodoo practitioners. Receive a reading with a trusted rootworker instantly. Call 1-888-4-HOODOO or visit hoodoopsychics.com. And by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of the Association of Independent Spiritual Churches located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. Thank you to all of our sponsors. Back to you, Reverend Art.
Thank you, Reverend James. And so excited to jump into this. I just want to preface the topic for tonight. You know, my magic didn't work, or did it? This topic came about as Doc Murphy and I were kind of chatting about a blog post that she wrote on her website on rootdocmurphy.com. I'm just going to share a link in the chat to this blog post. It was a fantastic read.
Well, thank you.
Longest title ever, but fantastic nonetheless. The title is New Moon Vow, or What to Tell Magical Learners and Adepts When Their Magic Doesn't Work or When They Think It Doesn't Work. And, you know, it's the information provided, as is kind of your forte, Doc Murphy, just truly some essential points to be made. And with that, I'm going to turn this over to you, and let's take it away.
Oh, alrighty then. Well, admittedly, I wrote this entry a lot of it addressing sort of my own feelings of, you know, why isn't stuff working out for me the way I did this root work, and it has been great, and now it's all just seemed to have blown sideways. But not just recently, but, you know, I went through a very long period of underemployment. When I first came to the cities, I went through bankruptcy. I went through a lot of hard times. I've had medical issues recently, and where sometimes you just kind of, you know, look and fall into that puddle of, you know, but I do magic to make sure bad things don't happen. Why do bad things continue to happen? Or this is exactly what I was hoping against, and it happened anyway. Maybe and then you fall into that self-doubt, right? You fall into that, well, maybe I'm just a shitty magician. Maybe I don't know what I'm
yep.
doing. When it succeeds, like, you're like king of the hill, right? You're sort of like, look, it's working. This is great. Let's do more magic. It's really fun. And then you get heady on it, and you're absolutely sure that the gods are smiling, and it's all, you know, and then there's the time when it doesn't. And then you start to ask all the questions, right? You start to ask the questions of, you know, well, did I not line my ducks up in a row properly? Do we, you know, as if we forget bad things happen, you know, just because they happen. And I kind of started out in the blog entry to kind of saying that, like, we here in the West in particular, we just are too easy to hurl platitudes at people when, if they're magic maybe is failing, or they're taking a spiritual dip, or they're having a dark night of the soul, and they're wondering, as they're staring up at the stars, which I think a lot of us have been in those places, where you just kind of look up and kind of go, does God even care? Does anybody? All the universe is out to help you. The universe doesn't give a shit. The universe is a bunch of stars. What do you mean? You know, you kind of get to that. And then you wonder, you know, and you feel bad and you're sad and all of it. And it is not helpful when somebody is suffering through a low point, a difficult point, a crisis, to say, oh, well, you know, clearly the gods have plans for you. Or clearly this is something that, you know, they won't hand you something that you know, you can't handle. You just need to communicate differently to the universe. Just don't tell people this. It's cruel. It's ignorant. It's mean. I actually knew of people that, you know, if somebody was going through a rough time, you know, it's really terrible that so-and-so has got some bad health and now they're going through a rough time and now they lost their job. And hearing how so many people would say, well, you know, they're manifesting this for themselves. It's only when they change that things are going to get better. Like, what a mean thing to say.
Agreed.
Know? No, they're not. No, they're not. You know, all these bad things are happening because clearly that's the pagan version of God is punishing you. You know, it's wrong and it's ignorant and it doesn't help. It's also kind of a bad habit I think we have in the West, too, of, you know, when our magic doesn't work, is that we start to treat it like a science project. If anybody remembers the first time I was on your show where I'm like, magic is not science. It's not. You can't go back and revisit the experiment and tweak a few things. I know there are some magical schools that really think you can do that. But that's not what magic is about. And so kind of going back and saying, well, how did my ducks not get into a row? Let me try it again. Let me change this variable. Let me do this. Let me do that. And then you overthink it. You know, I think we forget that magic is an art of the heart, right?
Right.
But, you know, just to address those questions, because I don't know how many times I sat next to and with my elders here in Paganistan, you know, when I've been going, you know, why is it working for everybody and not for me? And I'm getting a little emotional right now because I'm remembering some of those conversations. Why is it working for everybody else and not for me? Or why is it when I do magic for other people, it works, but when I try to do it for myself, it never does, or it feels like it never does, right? Why do I even bother with this? Maybe I should just give up and accept that the universe hates me or whatever. Maybe I'm cursed. We hear that a lot in the hoodoo community. Maybe I'm cursed. Maybe I need some stuff thrown off. You know, what I say kind of here and also in my blog entry is, you know, I don't have the answers. I've been through it all. Know these questions. Know these emotional places. I've been on the floor of my apartment crying because I've been without work and desperate and backed into a corner and all the prosperity magic in the world doesn't feel like it's doing anything.
I think most of us have probably been at least to some degree in similar boat. And
yeah,
you know, I like how you said it in the blog that, you know, I don't have an answer. Anyone claiming to have an answer is lying. And that's true because,
yeah,
I mean, there are so many variables that come to play. Scientific method ain't going to fix what didn't mm-hmm. work in, you know, spell X, Y, or Z. It's impossible to ascertain, but yet people beat themselves up.
Yeah, and that's where you kind of have to – that's when it's good to have not only, like, elders who will, like, not only give you a good talking to, but in the case of one of my elders, who's also my Reiki master, she just walked up and shook her head and just slapped me right across the head. It was just literally gave me a dope slap, full of Reiki, so it was okay. But where it was just like, you need to rethink how you're looking at this. And really, that's what starts to happen. You know, one of the real values I got when I was training in Ms. Katz's Hoodoo Correspondence course is the notion that, like, things are going to happen in the time that they happen. Not all magic is lightning fast. Sometimes things are gradual and slow. Learning that was a valuable tool to put in my toolkit, right? That it's, you know, I think there's a lot of people that still have that Doctor Strange notion of magic where if it's working, it's going to be big and dramatic and happen now. Sometimes it's quiet and subtle and it's already working, but you don't feel it yet. And that was something that I learned from Ms. Katz's course, but also through from my elders, and also them saying things like, you know, like, I'm too broke this week. I can't go out. I feel really bad. And they're like, here, come on, we're going to take you out. We're going to take you out to dinner. No, really, I can't accept that. I can't accept that. So listen, a gift from a friend is a form of prosperity. Start accepting what comes towards you, right? And that's just an example of prosperity and money, because I think all of us have been in those situations where we've been back in the corner financially, or we've lost our job, or we've gone through bankruptcy, or we've done whatever. But it's still a struggle for a lot of us with regard to love and relationships and those mysteries, right, where you do the work, And you think someone's into you and you think this is going to work. And then it's those are the ones that sometimes make you look up at the sky and go, you know, why doesn't the universe give two shits about anybody loving me? Right. And you fall into that hole too easily if you don't have just somebody else to kind of knock you into another perspective. There's more than one way to look at how your problem is being solved magically. And one of the good things about being an anthropologist and also looking at the traditions of other cultures is by seeing how they measure magical success or magical failure or what you have to do in order to make things happen. You don't get locked into one way of measuring magical success, right? And there is something too to be said about, okay, so maybe when you're doing magic for yourself, stuff isn't coming out the way you want to. That might have more to do with whatever kind of unknown inner issues that you still haven't dealt with yet that are causing some blocks. If you can clean the plate and do magic for other people when it succeeds, it means that you are successful. There's just some work you got to do with you. And I think there's something to that. If what everyone does is do magic for each other until you figure out your stuff, maybe that's a strategy to use. I have friends right now. I wrote this kind of for kind of my own processing pain with magic that was working and then wasn't. But I also have a lot of friends right now, and it's difficult because a lot of friends right now are going through some difficulty. I have one friend who I miss a lot, and he's out of work. He's out of unemployment. He's backed against the wall. Things don't seem to be working out, and you know, is basically said, yeah, please do the magical help because I don't know what else to do, kind of a thing. And you're sad when people get to that point, but I've been there, so I understand it. So, of course, I'm going to help you out magically. I have a friend who's going through a very violent divorce right now. There's a lot of protection work we got to make sure we're doing for her because she's not in a place where she can calm down and do it for herself. One of the things I bring up in my blog entry is that, you know, your emotions and your emotional state can cloud your judgment. And your judgment does have to be clear when you're planning magic. You know, if your heart is broken or you're confused or you're sick or you know, tend to that. Tend to your emotional state because it will cloud your judgment. You need your judgment to be clear, but your judgment also is not your will. And I kind of wonder if maybe sometimes people get into that tangle too, where, you know, conflation of your judgment and of your will. And that's kind of how I start out kind of my little bullet list of, you know, maybe some things we need to think about when we think your magic isn't working or, you know, some other things, but
and these have been some really intense points even made early on, you know, making sure, you know, your broom closet's clean, you know, working out those skeletons and any traumas and such. You know, we had even on Mystics and Mages to kind of address that, you know, did a show on how to use tarot for shadow work. You know, that's kind of a mm-hmm. big buzzword right now, shadow or buzz phrase, I guess, shadow work. But it's really, it really does affect you without you even knowing, without mm-hmm. you realizing how much it creeps in. It's like this insidious little virus that, you know, sneaks in the back door and says, ha, fucked you up. And and you're just looking at it going, what happened? You know, you got your pile of wax and herbs and oils, and you're looking at this thing going, maybe I can sell this as abstract art, but it didn't do what it was supposed to do. You know, and it's the same with judgment. You know, judgment, everybody likes to think that they have impeccable judgment. Judgment. You know, they are par excellence in that realm, but when it really gets down to it, you know, there are, whether it's a cultural bias, or, you know, it could be a familial bias that they grew up with, maybe they've kind of, you know, eschewed it along the way, it's very possibly still there and still messing with you in the background.
Yes.
And people don't think of these things. And
absolutely.
No one wants to think of themselves as fallible.
Mm-hmm. And boy, you better start thinking of yourself as fallible like now, because you are.
But being able to accept that and be humble enough to accept that, have that level of humility,
mm-hmm.
it's going to exponentially increase what you're able to accomplish.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I also kind of experiment with, you know, or write about and think about, you know, when we talk about transformational processes, you know, the shamanic processes, the alchemical processes, the whole cycle. And again, you can look at cultures worldwide, especially in their rites of passage, where these patterns are the same, where there is the pattern of, you know, you start this process of this journey, and there is a breaking down, and there is a dying, and there is a falling apart, and then there is a liminal period where, in a fallow period where it seems like nothing's happening, and then you start to grow, and you start to temper, and you start to refine, and then you come back, and you are transformed, and you are different, and this is a process that we revisit over and over and over again, where you know, the three stages of alchemy, you know, putrefaction, you know, cleansing, and then refinement. You can look at cultures around the world at that three-part rite of passage, but also look at it in shamanic ways too, breaking down, coming apart. We know this as magical people. We study it, we dig it, we love it, we think it's meaningful and beautiful. We see it in all the myths of the world. We see it in the story of Odin on the tree and of Christ on the cross and the alchemists and Osiris and Isis, and we see it everywhere. And then, like, you know, when it comes to our own stuff, what, we forget? We clearly forget. And when things start to break
yep.
down, we go, everything's falling apart. It's all coming to an end. And I admit this fully. I fall into this at times too, especially when things are difficult. Why do we not force ourselves or remember that when all the breaking down is happening, that's the start of something new. It's the start of a new process. No, it's not going to be easy. And yeah, there's some difficult stuff to go through, but you're going to come out the other side and it's going to be even better. And what you thought was wonderful before, that you're losing, that's falling apart before your eyes, you will come out the other end and it will be better than you thought. The story I frequently share with friends of mine is that when I was going through my divorce years ago, I would have dreams that my entire apartment was melting, like literally just, you know, and it was terrifying. And now I look back and I kind of go, I'm not even the same person that I was when all that was going on. So much has changed and so much is, there's plenty that needs work, but so much is better, you know. But you can't see it when you're in the moment, but the discipline of being able to say, this breaking down, this everything falling apart, this losing everything, hang on. is it Winston Churchill that said, you know, if you find yourself walking through hell, just keep walking.
Mm-hmm.
To see that that's the beginning of this process. And, you know, it's not as simple as, I'll just change my mindset and the universe has it. No, it's hard. It's a discipline. But to remember that somewhere in the throes of that difficulty, we somehow know that there's a transformation starting. It's just sometimes we forget when we're in the midst of it. So revisit that a lot when things kind of don't go well or when I'm in a really terrible place to kind of go like, it's not what the universe trying to teach me, but, you know, what's necessarily breaking down here? What has to change? And, man, change is hard, but it's inevitable, right?
It's very true.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. actually kind of funny because a lot of people know I am a practicing medium. And when I find myself in these situations where I'm starting to say, you know, screw it all and everything's falling apart, there's actually a song that pops into my head, Alanis Morissette. Out is through is the name of the song. And, you know, it really talks about the only way out is through, the only way things get better. And it instantly calms me. But it's just funny that, you know, even my guides are like, okay, settle down, ass. Here you go. You need this. Here's some like metaphysical antidepressants or something. But it's true. It's really true.
Mm-hmm. It's true. I mean, my cure is fire circle. Some of you have heard me talk about the fire circle process where I have that amazing tribe that does it with me every year, where when the things get hard, the fact that we could get together over beer or drinks or dinner and say, you know, it's a fire, you know, this is the year of fire circle, right? We did fire circle and then the magic and the transformation goes the entire year. Hang in there and we'll hang in there with you because we know what's happening here. And that sort of remembering that, you know, not only the alchemical process is going to make you come out more refined and clear on what you want to be, but that we revisit it over and over and over again. This is not one and done, right? The phoenix doesn't rise from the ashes just once and go, okay, that was nice. I mean, they got to keep doing it. And those of us that are on this path of doing magic and metaphysics and this sort of spiritual growth, we have to accept that we're going to face our demons and we're going to face the crumbling and we're going to face things falling apart over and over. And somehow it's through the working and the learning that, you know, this is where our life lessons are. And damnedest thing, no matter how bad things are, they don't stay that way. If you're really present with the process, you know, I guess is the best way to put it. I know it's only been, and I've been in this place a lot, and again, this is where a lot of the elders have been really helpful. It's only been where I got to the point of, this is never going to work out. Screw it. I'm going to get evicted. No one's ever going to love me. I'm never going to get published. I'm never going to have everything's falling apart. Something's wrong with my eyes. I got to those points where you just kind of go, I can't even anymore. I just can't. I can't think of a way to solve this problem. I don't know what else to do. I give up. I'm going to live under a bridge somewhere and just, you know, this is, you know, I've failed as a human being. I have failed as a scholar. I have failed as, you know, a member of my family. I failed, you know, just the failing and the failing. And the damnedest thing, it's when you finally like have that big washed in the blood of the lamb cry and surrender and kind of go, it's over. There's nothing more. I'm going to lose everything and that's the way it's going to be. And I'm going to, you know, then that's, oddly enough, that's when the magic kicks in. And a strong memory I have is when I first moved to the city is I was without a job and only had $1,000 in my bank account because I had a quick run to the cities because I had a bad breakup I was going through and I had to run. and wasn't financially prepared. And it just, I just couldn't get a job and I couldn't get employed. And it was just like, I was living on a student loan for the semester and it was depleting. And I'm like, what am I going to do? And I remember I just was curled up in my bed and I just crying, kind of like, I guess I just give up. There's nothing else I can do. And I woke up that morning and my old friend Drox had reached out via email and said, hey, Murphy, I hope you're doing okay. I remember a while back you say you needed some financial help. You want me to loan you some money so you can get on your feet? And she did, and I was able to. It was just sort of like literally went to bed, woke up, checked my email, and I went, oh, my God. And when that happens, that's when you realize that you got to sometimes get out of your own damn way when you're doing magic and somehow let those moments happen. When the gifts come, when the favors come, when the, you know, here, let me do this for you. Well, I don't know if I can accept it. Please accept it. Pay me back when you feel like you can, or you know what, even better, pay it forward. Don't worry about it. Take those moments as the magical gifts they are, right?
That's another side of humility and humbleness that so many people they're afraid that it's going to make, you know, accepting this gift is going to make them appear weak. That is not the case.
Mm-hmm. Not at all.
Be open to this.
Yes. Yes. And that's the other lesson you learn is like sometimes your own damn pride gets in the way, right?
Uh-huh.
Your own sense of who you think you are and what you're supposed to be doing. And boy, the Fire Circle tribe and I have, you know, a term for that. We're basically like, you know, basically like the gods, you know, turn you over their knee and just spank you. And you know, spirits remind you that you're not who you think you are. And but with that also, I mean, you know, the acceptance that it's the surrender. I mean, I talk about a little bit about Fire Circle. And for those that want the experience of Fire Circle, reach out. We'll give you some information. But if those that have experienced it or that haven't and don't quite get it, it is 3 nights nonstop of just running, singing, chanting, drumming, dancing, anything to keep alchemical energy going until the sun goes up. And then you sleep during the day, and then you do it again for 2 nights in a row. And the whole point is to just run yourself past what you think your limitations are. And it's fun because we all start charging with that energy. We get the drums going. We run. We dance. We do everything to get everything going. And then there comes a point in the night where you kind of wobble, and you realize that you have to surrender to it. Everything that you've built. You know, it's like that old game you used to play when you were a kid in the pool, you know, and those kiddie pools where you all go around in the circle in the same direction in the pool to make a whirlpool. And then when you stop, it just carries you along. Also that relationship with the, not only the forces that be that you're aligning yourselves, but the forces that you help create, the energy you help create, there comes a point where you build it, but then you got to surrender to it. And that's been
great
analogy. A magical lesson. Yeah. Yeah. Fire Circle is a fiery version of that whirlpool where, like I said, we create this circle, this cauldron, this Athanor of energy. And then through working it for those 3 nights in a row and surrendering to it, boy, you punch through. And again, it's not your actual limitations. It's often what you think your limitations are.
Perceived.
That's what gets blown to pieces. Yes. Yes, perceived ones. So, and it's interesting because
perception's
with magic,
a bitch.
You need it, and yet, boy, it can get in the way.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times with Western-style magic, there's so much focus on cultivating your will, and which you need to do magic for sure, and making sure that everything goes to plan, that I really wonder sometimes we're forgetting that sometimes you just have to, after you set up the magic, you have to surrender to what it is that you created and let it happen. That's hard when you're the kind of person who's a planner, right? To just surrender to things. So this is you can probably hear it in my talking. This is still something that I'm working out myself, that I move back and forth on. You know, how much of this is what we do in tandem with the energies that are with us, and how much of it is letting go and surrendering to it and striking that balance. I'm still chewing on it myself. So if it seems a little incomplete when I'm talking about it, it's supposed to be, because I'm still working it out. But yeah, and it doesn't get easier. You know, this is not the path of least resistance, and that's the way we want it. I mean, sometimes when things are hard and not going our way, we forget, like, didn't we choose this? Isn't there a reason why we wanted magic not just to have a good time all the time, but we wanted, you know, the gnosis, the firsthand knowledge of everything about life, and that includes pain, that includes fear. That includes those quiet moments when nothing's happening, and you have to figure out what to do with those, and also profound enlightenment and joy. And it doesn't get easier, but it's sort of like grad school. It's not going to get easier, but it's not supposed to. But it gets more and more enriching as you keep going. And, you know, I'm hoping that it doesn't sound platitudinous in that sense, because I know I have friends who are listening who are really going through a hard time right now, to be able to just say, you know, it's a matter of just being fully in it when you're in it, and you are going to come out the other side if you align yourself with the forces, really.
You know, and ultimately, mastery and success are not endpoints; they are journeys.
True that.
Needing it to be an end point, you will further limit yourself.
True that. Preach
it. And frustrate the hell out of yourself.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, in some ways, I'm very fortunate that I had a period before I moved to Paganistan that I studied with Shambhala Buddhists, not only to learn really good meditation, but just the discipline of you're doing nothing, and that's the way it's supposed to be. You are not supposed to be anywhere but here, and you are here in your experience, and there's not supposed to be a goal. This is just where you are, and to be able to comfortably sit in that space is something that I'm really glad I learned and still can manage to kind of reach out and grab onto from time to time. I know a lot of folks don't have that. And well, part of the humility too is, and I, when it comes to asking for help, yeah, ask for help from your friends, magical and otherwise. You know, don't. You know, I've asked for magical help of all kinds. And like I said, I went through a long period of underemployment. Now I'm out of academia. Ha ha, that's all done. But when I was struggling through that, it seemed like every summer there was no money because there were no classes, and it just never seemed to work out. Boy, like people would help out magically, they'd help out practically. That's when another thing hits you, like, wait, what prosperous gift is this? I've got amazing friends who want me to succeed and who want to help. That's a gift in and of itself. And when you push that away because you feel like you got to figure it out all by yourself, you're missing an even bigger magical event right there.
Lot of us don't take the time to build that community, to have that around us, because we have that misperception of needing to be, you know, the ultimate master and teacher and what have you. You know, we talked a little bit about that last week with Miss Beth on building a spiritual community. And it's so important to have that network around you.
Mm-hmm.
Just to continue your learning, your growth, your self-discovery, your shadow work, all of it. It's all part and parcel.
Mm-hmm. And the really good ones take you down a few pegs,
yep.
Or help you point out when your
sucks,
vision
but, yep.
isn't clear. Oh, like I said, I love my Fire Circle tribe because there's been times when we love each other dearly, but we also can drive each other a little buggy. But they're the people I trust the most. And if there's a time when my point of view is off, or I know I'm right about this, and I'm just hearing them say, "Have you thought maybe that you might be a little bit wrong about that?" And that they're the ones that can actually change your perception. You know, like my elder friend who slapped me over the head. Sometimes you need that kind of help. But the other help, and I think maybe sometimes I know I fall into this, and I'll be honest about that. But I think other people too is that like, okay, yeah, you can ask for help from the friends and the people that you can apprehend on a daily basis. You also need to ask for help from those that you don't apprehend with your senses. You know, the spirits, the gods, mm-hmm. God, whoever it is that powers your understanding of divine relationship. I say, get over
ancestors.
Yourself. I mean, yes, those that the unseen, you know, energies, and I have fallen into this trap myself, where you know I may have a working altar going, and then think that the gods have abandoned me, right? And I remember I had a client not that long ago who told me about a relationship she had with a goddess, and some, you know, a lot of bad stuff was happening, and she said, "I just feel like she's abandoned me." And I'm like, no. It's actually when stuff is really, really bad that they're sticking by you. You just need to, like, acknowledge their presence. They just, you know, they're there. They're just doing different work. And sometimes you realize that you give advice to other people that you should be taking yourself, right?
Yep.
ring that bell. I think maybe that's the secret. Like, if I'm giving somebody advice and they think it's good, that's what I should be following myself. And then somebody does it all works out. But I think there are some folks that get involved in magic, and they forget that it's a religious and spiritual activity. It's an art. It's a natural divine practice, but it's also about religious or spiritual relationship. It's about relationships that you have with those that you don't apprehend on a daily basis. Your ancestors, the gods, the spirits, the whomever, the angels, the demons, whoever it is that you party with. And how often do people say, "Well, I work with these entities"?
But do they work with you?
Do they love you? Do you love them? Do you have a relationship with them? Do you ask them for help? Do they ask you for help? The whole work with thing is like, well, yeah, I work with a bunch of people at a really great nonprofit. They're my coworkers, but I don't have the same relationship with the people I work with as I do with my friends and family and my beloved community. What kind of, you know, are you forgetting that you're supposed to be cultivating a relationship too, and that's what's going to power how you perceive your magic going? Look at the stories of the gods, goddesses, spirits, divine avatars, the mythic people that you admire. It's not like they didn't go through some shit too in order to become who they were, right? You know, I know the ones that come to mind right now for me are like, you know, I'm a devotee of Persephone and Hades. Let's talk about what Persephone's been through, okay? And now she comes back even stronger and a queen. Or Odin hanging upside down after sacrificing an eye and then comes out with the gift of wisdom and being able to perform magic and to read and write. Jesus, you know, Jesus Christ on the cross for Christians, you know?
Right.
He still had to die. He still had to die. He couldn't beat death. In order for that miracle to happen, he had to die. Right. So, to be able to look to those not only just as stories and to say, "Well, I work with them," but you know, do you love them? Do you cry when you need their help? Do you have that sort of emotional, you know, tie to them? And I think myself in my community studies where they think that if they engage in magic, that they don't have to do this religion business, right? If I do magic, then I don't have to pray. I'm like, poor shit. We could use a little bit more of that. We could use a little bit more emotional release, and we could do a little bit more of like, I can't do it all myself. I need help as well. And that's not saying that you're not magically effective. If anything, your magic's going to take on a different fervor. And it is not easy when you've been kind of socialized to think that, well, magic is one thing and religion is another thing.
Right.
Really, they're the same thing.
You know, we actually have so many questions lined up. And Reverend James has been on top of keeping an ordered list for us. I think maybe we should jump over and see how many we can knock down.
All right. Sounds like a plan here.
You still with us, Reverend James?
Yes. Okay. So we have two listeners that have been mainly asking questions tonight. And the way out, I think I'll do this is I'll throw out one to you. And if, you know, perhaps we've already answered it, maybe you could just give us a little bit succinct answers on what that might be for those that might have not understood or missed it.
Okay. Sounds good.
So Troll T asks, when can we be sure that doing something magical will do something effective?
Well, you can never be 100% sure. I mean, that's where faith and that's where, you know, experience and all those things that seem ineffable, like, come in. I mean, there's, I know in some traditions you can look for signs and movement and other sorts of divine conversation that things are moving along. And there is a confidence that you go through the world with that everything in its own time. But surety, like, you know, even in scientific contexts, there's never complete surety. So that's something that actually that you have to, you know, you don't 100% leave it to faith, because then why do magic? But you don't 100% leave it in terms of all it is that you do and not rely on faith. There's a balance that's struck. And it's not just, it's effective when you get what you want, but it's effective when the change occurs, when something occurs that you didn't anticipate maybe, or that's plowing along. I mean, there's no way to really gauge that. And that's something else that I think it's hard for us to wrestle with, that, you know, we tell clients this all the time. There's no guarantee. There's no recipe. There's no, you know, you have to understand that there's nothing precise about this and be willing to understand that. And I think us as practitioners need to be reminded of that as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. Troll T asks, and this kind of ties in with what you were just talking about, but you may have more to say here. Are there magical working barometrics? So, like, maybe perhaps best divination devices to access whether it might be coming sooner rather than later, or later rather than sooner, not necessarily, you know, nail down a specific date per se, but maybe gauge how things are working or if it's working at all.
I think something like that really is going to be individual. You know, how you can gauge whether or not something's going to be effective versus not effective. You have to sit with your own divine relationships and what divinatory methods work for you, and with your own traditions about how to plot effectiveness. I mean, how I might do that may not be the same way that Reverend Art does it, may not be the same way that Naga Shiva does it. You have to find that. And then ultimately, if your own judgment is clouded because you've got too much of an emotional stake in the outcome, which is a big one, it might be better to just kind of set your barometrics aside and sit with somebody who's completely,
own a friend
out of the situation. Yeah. Someone who's objective, or somebody who's out of, and get a completely fresh perspective that isn't, you know, your own. I'm going through a thing, and I mentioned it to, you know, our mutual friend, Heidi Holton. And she and I decided one night to do a tarot reading swap because we both had some questions and we wanted some objective perspective. I'm in Minnesota. She's in North Carolina, thinking about Nashville. And we did a tarot swap. And it was so nice to kind of get a fresh perspective from somebody who who doesn't know all your friends and isn't in your business all the time, and, you know, to just kind of say, here's what it's looking like to me. And I think there's just as much value to tossing your barometrics aside and getting the perspective of somebody else, especially if it's something you have an emotional stake in, for sure.
Okay, and there's a bit of a follow-up question to that. Are there any magical means of becoming objective?
Are there any magical means of becoming objective? I guess I don't understand that question.
That's kind of – I think that's a difficult kind of a topic to attribute to a magical practice. Objectivity comes from observation and a willingness to accept, you know, ideas or occurrences that may contradict what we expected to see or what we believe. I mean, there are different things that could be used. There's, like, you know, to bolster that. There's different crystals that exist and resonate in this way. I didn't mean to just jump in, but you know, and then there's things like clarity oil and things that can assist, but true objectivity is, and correct me if I'm wrong, Murphy, but it's primarily a developed and learned behavior over time of interacting with, whether it's magic or life, what in general.
Objectivity is a goal. I mean, it's not. You learn
this.
It's
a process.
You know, right? It's a process where you aim for objectivity, but everyone has their own perspective and their own biases that they have to leave at the door in order to be objective. But you still have checks in place with other people in order to make sure that everything is clear. And again, I might be veering away from what it is that we're really kind of pinning down here, which is you may be able to prepare and get all your ducks in a row and have, but stuff still is not going to work, or it's not going to feel like it's working.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more about what do you do as a magician and as a spiritual person in those moments where you feel like the gods are shitting on you, or where you feel like you're locked in a glass box and everyone's getting a miracle except you. And when you feel like that, you know, what do you do? Do you do anything? And if anything, focusing too much on getting your ducks in a row magically may be the wrong thing to do. So, with regard to how people can, you know, is there a way to that varies from person to person. What's going to work for
mm-hmm.
for you, Art, is probably may not work for me. And you can't hang your hat on is there a right way to do it or one wrong way to do it. It varies by culture to culture, too. And don't get me started on that. We're going to have a whole other show. No. I mean, I share a paragraph in my blog that when I was a little kid, I used to pry open peony buds. I used to go in the backyard where the peony buds were, and I used to just peel them because I thought I was helping them bloom. See, that's what, yay, I'm going to help it. And finally, my mother had to say, you know, if you keep doing that, you're going to kill them. Stop it. And more recently, I have found, because I've had a Reiki student recently and somebody at a festival that was getting Reiki for the first time and wanted to understand it, and I found that the analogy that I asked them to, if they needed a visual, was to think of a time-lapse film of a rose blooming or a flower blooming where it just kind of, just opens up like that. And just it hit me, the contrast of those two moments just kind of just hitting when I was writing. It was like, you know, that's what it's about. You don't push magic to work by your standards. You don't put demands on it and say, this is what I want you to do. You use your energy in accordance with it. You start the energy, and then you have to release and let it happen. And I think maybe somewhere along the line when we get tangled up in thinking, this isn't working, this isn't working, this isn't working, we're forgetting to bloom, right? We're too busy trying to peel the peony buds open, trying to trying to make them bloom on our terms. And that's not something you can control. That's not something that you can quantify. That's something that you have to, or as a friend of mine who's an astrologer, she says, "You Murphy, you're really good at thinking your way out of things, but sometimes you got to feel your way out of them." And that's hard. That's hard, you know. And sometimes the hindrance also is amazing still how many people I run into that will do all kinds of magic in the world for other people, but don't think they're deserving. It may be subtle, or it may be out front, but they don't think they're deserving of, you know, the good fortune or the luck or the wealth or the health that they have coming toward them. And boy, I'm getting emotional again because I did when I wrote the paragraph at the end of the blog entry. We're like, you do deserve everything. You do deserve love. You deserve luck. You deserve all of these things. You deserve to be alive because it's good, and you deserve to be on this earth and get the basic hospitality that it provides. Right? You deserve all of this. And a lot of times the real discipline is not in making things happen, but in once it's happening, letting it happen to you, you know, and accepting it. I think there's a lot of people who don't think to look within to find their magic because they don't want to look there. Not that they don't think about it. Or they like, what do you mean? I think there are people that just don't want to go there. Because it's like kind of like our conversation earlier in the hour that, like, if you have gunk, clear out before your judgment is clear, before, you know, that's a scary place to go. But if it means you have to surrender to that rather than try to control it, I think this is also something that we wrestle with when we think the magic doesn't work or when the magic doesn't have the results that we do. It sucks. It's hard. Like I said, I'm getting a little emotional because I'm remembering those hard times. I'm remembering, you know, where sometimes the solutions don't come until you just are on the floor and you're like, I don't even know what to do anymore. I don't know what to do. And when you get to that point, damn, it's really amazing how things start to happen to make sure it does happen, but it's in the way that you absolutely least expect it. And that's what you have to be open to being able to apprehend. That's the discipline comes in. It's, you know, maybe for me, prosperity is getting my dream job with, Apple computers, right? And that doesn't happen, and it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. But if prosperity coming your way takes a different form, takes a different space, forces you to change your life in a way you weren't expecting, you have to be open that that is the result that's coming your way and is the result of your work. And could that be a combination of your work, what the ancestors or the spirits or the gods or whoever the angels have in mind for you? Is there a path deep down that your inner self knows to be clearer that your outer self doesn't? I mean, that's been the biggest lesson magically for me over the course of these decades is if I'm focused on this being the result and I'm missing what the actual result is that's benefiting me, what's the work that needs to be done there? And that's the hard part, you know, and
right.
Where you actually do look back years later and go, I guess that magic actually did work. It just, I wouldn't have thought in a million years it would have been like that. Right.
Very true. Mm. What's next, Reverend James?
All right. Wickway is up, asks, is it better to be specific in magic or do spells for general changes? I guess that's kind of asking, would one be more successful than the other or more apt to be successful?
Well, I guess it would depend on what it is that you're trying to accomplish, what you're seeking. I mean, if you're general, let's say you're looking for, let's just go back to the job. And so you're looking for work, and you're at a position where, you know, you're not desperately looking or you don't have a specific job in mind, but you want something really great come your way and you're ready for it. probably the kind of spell where you put the antenna up and spread your wings and say, okay, let's just be general. Let's have something wonderful come my way, and I'm open for anything. That sort of general approach would probably really work. But then you'd have to be very observant about how things manifest, right? You know? Whereas if you know that what you're supposed to be doing is XYZ position, and you've studied for this and you focused on it and this is the position that you want, then the more specific that you can get, the more powerful it's going to be. Again, you have to assess where you're at, what your emotional state is, what you're trying to accomplish, and then what you're ready to accept. So doing a general spell working can be very successful. Doing a specific spell working can be very successful. But they're different approaches, and you have to be ready to recognize what success may look like or what not success may look like. What else have we got? Lots of, oh boy, it's the big, lots of questions. I'm getting dizzy.
All right, so I'm going to split these up because we had one person asking more than the other. So Wickway is up also asks, what do you do when the outcome doesn't come out the way you'd hoped, but later something better comes along?
That's the best thing ever when that That's when you go, oh my God, it really, you know, and you can't predict that. I could talk about that with the job that I have currently right now. You know, I was struggling to find academic work and that right professor job and that right professor gig, and it just wasn't working out, and it wasn't working out. And one day I looked online because I needed to donate a computer that didn't work anymore, and I found the nonprofit organization that recycles the used computers, and I happened to see they were looking for work, and I went, well, what the hell? I'm going to apply. I work there now with the help of Fire Circle, meaning the bad luck off of me, and a group worker friend of mine who helped me get this job. I work at a place that's great. I never would have thought in a million years I'd be working for a tech nonprofit. I didn't think I would have been qualified 5 years ago, but there was that whole, like, I need work. This came my way. I got the interview. I got another interview. Oh, hell. If they offer it to me, I'm going to take it. And they did. And I love where I'm working. I am happy that I'm not grading papers anymore, right? And I can look and say, my guess, and so much magic has happened. Like I said, I have a job now where I have health insurance. As some of you know, I had eye surgery not that long ago. If I'd have still been in the adjunct throes, nobody would have given two shits about my eyesight. I was able to get surgery because I had health insurance, right? So now I can look at this and say, this is great. This is better than I would never have expected. You know?
It's like that Rolling Stones song, right? I believe it's Rolling Stones. You don't always get what you want, but you get what you need.
And always get what you need. Exactly. Exactly. And now you've got Mick Jagger earworming in my head. Thank you for that.
I guess it's better
but
than
that's
a Rick
true. Where you can kind of look back and go, oh, man, this is not what I ever would have anticipated, but I'm so happy and ended up this way. And that's where you do look back on, you know, the spiritual journey, the alchemical process, the magic, and kind of go, well, maybe what I think I want is the problem. And maybe stepping back and saying, let me put the process and align myself with the energies and get that in motion and then see what comes my way and be open to it. It is hard when you think you've got the answer figured out. So yep. I'm glad you asked that question because, yeah, when that happens, that's the best thing ever. Or like when you think you want this relationship with this guy to last because he's the most wonderful. And then like a year later, you're like, oh, he was, what was I thinking? This guy was a moron. And you're glad he's out of your life, right? Sometimes it's also hindsight lessons, but that's when you kind of go, well, really, the magic did work. It just wasn't what I expected. So sometimes it's a dialogue with our own expectations that we need to have.
Nice. Reverend James.
All right. Let's see. The next one is Troll T. He asks, are all results visible? Are they means of evaluating the invisible results?
Well, if somebody can come up with a way to validate things that you can't see? I mean, in the sense that, like, you know, can you apprehend success with your other senses? Yes. yeah. You know, do things sound differently? Do things taste differently? Does your body feel differently? Those aren't visible necessarily, but they're apprehended sensorially. In other ways, like I said, with regard to things like your psychological state, with regard to even just how the world feels, you know. I remember after I had pretty advanced meditation training in Milwaukee, and we learned this advanced one where you open up your crown chakra and everything, and literally the world felt different. And knowing that you could kind of go back there and find that spot, that's not visible. And again, I think this focus on documenting or quantifying whether or not this is successful, I think sometimes when you drop the measurements and just go with the experience, that's a better measure of whether or not something is successful or not.
You know, it is kind of intriguing in some aspects that with quantum physics studies, they are kind of seeing some previously not visible aspects of different types of workings and such. But that we're nowhere near at a point to being able to truly ascertain the invisible results. And then when you bring in the thought of like chaos theory, you know, the whole butterfly effect, you know, the mm-hmm. invisible results can be so far reaching, you know, it could go around the globe out to the moon and back several times before we actually see the results. So, you know, it's such a complex thing. I'd love to find a quantum physicist to come on the show sometime and talk about that.
I will hide under the table when you do that. That's hard. Just give me my nice squishy anthropology where anything is depending on the cultural perspective, and you got me in my area. But oh, that would be hard. That would be hard.
You know, I do want to throw out, I did extend us a little bit tonight because these questions are phenomenal.
Oh, okay.
And so, and it's more Murphy. So, hey, it's a win-win.
Well, okay then. Well, let me grab a snack here while you're extending me here. I haven't had dinner yet, so let me grab a cookie. I'm going to come on over here and grab that. Okay, here we go. Now I'm ready. Got my cookie. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go.
I love it. Reverend James.
All right. Tolte asks, can magic result affect potential or means or one's disposition such that future results will be more likely to succeed?
Yes.
That was probably okay. The most succinct answer we've had.
Well, if magic can't change that about yourself, then why the hell even do it? I mean, ultimately, I mean, this goes back to even to Crowley, too, where, you know, ultimately the biggest point of change and transformation is within yourself. You know,
right.
That's what changes, and then that will change your perspective. That's what changes your actions. That's what changes your – that's what changes everything. But it has to start with how you change yourself. So, yeah, that's where it starts for sure.
Right.
All right. Troll T asks, are less conflicted effects easier to manage, like making an amulet that will assist by building power to use later to do more difficult tasks?
I want to find that question so I can read it, because that's
1942 is the timestamp.
It's 1842 on mine. Hang on.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Are less conflicted effects easier to manage? This again, has to do with, I think, a magician's experience. You know, I don't think any two magicians really approach magic the same way, even if they're trained in the same cultural magic or the style of magic. So, um, you know, I find I fall with questions like that. I fall too much into the whole, like, it depends on who's doing the work. You know, an amulet for building power may be very easy to manage for some magicians because this is what their musical instrument is, right? Is their thing. For others, this is difficult magic to do, and they excel in other ways. So there's a little bit too much either or with that question. So I'm just going to pass on that one because there's too many factors with regard to who's doing it, how they're doing it, what they're doing, and their own perspectives about skill and difficulty. You know, making amulets, how, with what materials, with what, you know, you can make an amulet with a stick outside, but you could also make an amulet, you know, in a goldsmith's studio with everything that you need. So there's too many variables to really come up with a tight answer for that.
I would have to agree. I was trying to think of different aspects to that where it may kind of come together, but I have to agree. Way too many variables to really be able to provide something clear.
Right. No. With the questions too, I mean, I worry that, well, I won't worry about it. I contemplate, I think, I mull that here we are talking about those moments where we think magic doesn't work, we believe magic doesn't work, and really we're kind of our own worst enemy with regard to those situations, right? It's not so much about whether your method is right or your ducks are in a row, but it's more about when you get in your own way. It's more about those emotional places, and it's more about, you know, really reassessing what it means to be like a spiritual grown-up, you know? That there comes a point when you're a little kid and you ask Santa Claus for everything that you want, right? And if you don't get what you want, you're mad or you're upset or you're sad or you think Santa don't love you, right? And then as you grow and you change, what you want changes, how you ask for what you want changes. If you don't get what you want, you are more measured in your response, or you think maybe there's a reason why shouldn't have gotten that, or that's out of stock, I'm never going to get it, I need to accept it. Where your relationship with your own magical process requires that you also grow, you know. All the love magic, I'm still waiting for the person. All the love magic I've done since my divorce, right? Stuff came, I got what I wanted, and then promptly regretted it 6 months later, or tried and then realized that maybe I was wishing for the wrong thing, or, you know, maybe the kind of relationship that I wanted when I was 31 sure as hell isn't the kind of one I want at 51. Those have to be factored in also with regard to measuring magical success, is that you are also going to grow as a person, as a spirit, as a practitioner, and in your relationships with the divine and with the world, and you have to note that that's part of the process too. And if we're still falling, yeah, you fall into a puddle of crying when there isn't good results, but it's a really desperate time, right? You need a job now. And you're feeding Saint Expedite all the pound cake in the world, and he just doesn't seem to be listening, right? And is that truly a place to do magic? Is that truly going to be effective? I mean, when it has to be, it has to be. But is it also, you know, sometimes when we are trying to do magic to get what we want, are we so blinded by what we think we want that we don't see that we have to grow past that, or we have to change what it is that we think that we want, or we just have to be a spiritual grown up at some point, right? Maybe you aren't going to get what you want. Okay, life's not over. Then what? And that those sorts of questions interest me more than, you know, necessarily methods or specific materia magica or processes. It's the growth and the transformation that needs to happen, because that's the hard stuff, you know.
Right.
You can't smooth wood with a scrap of velvet. It's got to be hard, which means that you got to reassess also why you're wanting what you're wanting and when and how. So I don't know if that made any sense at all. I just was just kind of felt this erupting sort of, it's not about the toys. It's not about play with your sword. It's about ultimately, the tools that aid in your ability to, create your transformation. But ultimately, you got to see that your own transformation at work means that you thinking you know what you want or what the results are may be changing on the spot. And it's hard to recognize when you're in a position where you're like, St. Expedite, I need a damn job now, right? So.
Mm-hmm. Well, back to you, Reverend James.
All right. Trollty asks, is it beneficial to hire professionals to assist us, like when we want to do specialist work on stuff in which we are involved? For instance, in, normal mundane things, we might hire a contractor to help us renovate a house.
Yes, 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 yes. I'm a very big fan of, if you do the magical work that you're doing and you, let's say there's specific results or your emotional judgment is too cloudy, absolutely hire a professional. I have done it. I have reached out to friends of mine who do different styles of magic or have different ways of approaching things. It's sometimes fun to work with somebody whose tradition you know nothing about and then just say, I need help getting a job, do your thing. I am absolutely a fan of if you don't think you're getting, along with examining the idea of results, if you're not getting what you need in all seriousness, when you need something to happen and to change, and you can't seem to be in a place to make it happen, absolutely ask for help. Absolutely hire a professional. I'm a big fan of making sure that, if what you want to do is, put on a great dinner, but you've never been much of a baker, go talk to your friend who bakes great cakes to help you out with the cake that night. There's no shame in that. And if anything, you're going to get people who are good at what they do. First off, they'll love it because, they love doing what they do. And people are happy to give, and they're happy to help. Absolutely ask for that help. And absolutely hire people that know what the heck they're doing. I'm definitely a big fan of that.
Okay. Troll T asks, in magic, how much of the work and which should be done by these assistants as compared to oneself? An example, are there particular things which are better done by us as the focus of the spell?
Well,
I think that kind of goes back to the last answer where,
yeah,
if you're so close to the subject that you can't maintain that objectivity and that clarity, remove that variable and hire someone.
Mm-hmm. There's something about going, I'm going to get on with my day-to-day. I know that so-and-so's got my back with regard to this issue. I know, I've got faith in them. I know what they're going to do is going to work. And this is one thing that I know I can put out of my mind because their work works. And there's something to that mindset magically that opens up a lot of doors too.
Trollty asks, are there dimensions or levels of cause we should be aware of in trying to cause change in particular ways? I have the following thesis, which I find helpful and accurate. The best dimensions of magic employment is that in which we wish to see change happen. For example, if you just do the magic mentally, then mentality is the best dimension for magic's effect. Want physical results, better to do spell work and ritual physically.
I'm reading it myself here. Sure. You know, again, this is the matter of experience and opinion, too. I have friends here in the community who basically say they used to do much more physical magic and ritual, but now they're to the point where, like, they don't even bother with getting the stuff out. They know they can do it all mentally or on the astral plane or internally, and they get the same results. Now, this is their experience. This is their definition of magical success and results. I think there are always going to be people that just will like to do magic the way they like to do it. I find I have to have a physical component because I'm a physical person and a sensory person in order to break out of overthinking things, which I am expert at. And I think you're falling into the realm of people are going to do what they do, how they need to do it, as what works best for them. And if they can't, you get somebody who does something different.
You know, I'm gonna jump in and kind of jump us around a little bit. We'll get back to you in a moment here, Reverend James. But there were some questions that popped up a little bit more recently that I really think kind of flow with what we've been talking about as well. First off, how can you know when to hire someone, you know, if they're authentically gifted and can do the work? What's your take on that, Murphy?
How can you tell when it's time to hire somebody, or how can you tell
or
when
you hire
gifted?
Someone that, yeah, that can do the work? How do you find these people that can do the work?
How do I find them? I'm surrounded by them. I'm in Paganistan.
Well, not you specifically. I mean, you get what I'm saying. You know, because there are a lot of people out there that are just out for a buck. And,
right.
You know, you
this
see it on
is,
Etsy and everything else where they steal pictures and all kinds of crazy.
Sure. And again, this goes back to, I think we were talking about this earlier, and I think when you mentioned about last week's guest about, you know, this is when it's good to have spiritual community or sangha or a group of people that you trust implicitly. Word gets around about who's good and who isn't. There's always going to be people that put out a shingle and try to make a buck, and their reviews on Google or whatever. You know, I think there was a time when you knew who was good to take care of certain situations because the neighborhood knew about them, or your family knew them, or the community knew about them. Before you start shooting off, looking for someone to take care of your you know, magical situation because it seems to be out of your hands, make sure that you have a community of trustworthy people, people that you see regularly, readers or whoever, and get their opinions.
Right.
This isn't, you know, magic isn't something to be done completely in solitude. I think you're right. There's a stereotype of the, you know, hermit on the hill from the tarot deck, and that's the highfalutin mystical, you know, solitude that you need to. No, I mean, any sort of magical, spiritual, religious goal is a community one. Even monks who live in monasteries and take a vow of silence live together, right? So cultivate the work of community first, because you need the support, but you need those boundaries. And then through your relationships with people, you'll find who it is that is excellent, or who's good, or who, you know, cultivate that first before you start reading, you know, Google reviews.
You know, and I will say too, vetting the sources, you know, if you haven't had the opportunity to build that community and build that network, build those connections, do what you can to vet the sources that you do find. You know, that's one of the, mm-hmm. the beautiful things about being about AIR, the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers. We have a code of ethics. It's published. It's out there. It's public. This is something that everyone in the organization has accepted and uses as a guidelight, you know, guidepost, what have you, to in order to
you know, practice their craft. And things like this do exist. These things, you know, take that time. Don't go off Google reviews. Don't go off, you know, sales on Etsy. Don't, these things can be artificially inflated.
Yes.
And take the time to, and there's actually on the AIR website as well, maybe Reverend James can toss up a link if he can find it quickly, about questions to ask your root worker when, you know, interview them before you pay them. Just throwing that
out. Yep. There's a long paragraph that Nagashiva put into the chat, and I want to take a look at it here just real quick. Quite a bit of focus on certainty, but the intention of this previous question was when one can come to the decision that magic is something which should be attempted because there's an assessment that is likely or possible to be effective. Quite a number of my questions relate to and can be easily fielded by referral to readings assessment. This is an aspect of Hoover, which I find interesting. Is that something I've heard you touch on much in this episode? Well, it's because we're talking about when magic doesn't work or when we think it doesn't work. And I don't know, I'm actually now thinking, because now with that statement, you lit up a little light in my brain here. It's like, you know, is success and effectiveness the same thing, right? Sure, magic can be effective, but that doesn't mean it's always successful. That's a different question. Whether or not people get involved in magic because there's a possibility of effectiveness on a level other than what science can provide or other than what just going about your day-to-day, sure, I think that interests a lot of people. But I think the ones that are serious about sticking with it as a place for transformational growth, realize that there's more to it than that, you know. I through this episode and through the blog entry, I find myself asking a lot more as a questy kind of question, what is the meaning of ineffective magic? You know, not just how do we prevent it from happening? Or when the magic isn't successful or magic is ineffective, not just how do we prevent that from happening but what does it mean? What does it mean? What does ineffective magic or unsuccessful magic actually mean? Right? And when you start to work it into the whole process of spiritual growth and transformation, then what we perceive as failures or what actually are unsuccessful attempts at magic may have their own meaning in our lives too. And I don't have that worked out yet. I'll just put that out right now and just say that I just started with this, with that part. And so I don't have a lot on that with regard to fully formed thoughts, but I am asking the question because I don't believe anything. If you really think about it, there's a lot in our lives that don't mean a heck of a lot, but when you decide something's going to be meaningful, you have to come at it from all angles. So I guess that's the best way to address that statement. So
we have time for maybe two more questions. I'll bounce back over to you, Reverend James.
Okay. In my order here, we have, what is the best way to know when to stop trying or to know when one is banging one's head fruitlessly upon unmovable obstacles? Is it again the same kind of thing, divination for such results?
Oh, I'm so glad.
I think this is a good question.
This is one of the valuable lessons I learned from my hoodoo training with Miss Cat, was there does come a point where you got to set a limit. It can be an arbitrary limit. It can be an arbitrary cutoff date, but set it because, okay, let's say you're trying to make Skippy fall in love with you, right? And trying to get that working. Well, okay, maybe the first love working that you tried kind of worked a little bit, but not really. Do you try again? Sure. You try again? Sure. But if you and Skippy are not hitting it off the way you want to, you can either fall into a puddle and say, I'm a terrible magician, or you can say, well, I'll keep trying because Skippy's the one I want. Or, which is the most valuable lesson of all, say, all right, I'm going to give myself until December to see if something's going to happen with me and Skippy, and I'm going to move on. Yeah. Should you, if you're making progress or not making progress and you want to try again, go ahead, try again. You can keep trying. You can intensify and focus. Lord knows I've done this too. But there does come a point, and it is valuable when you can go, all right, I'm going to set an arbitrary cutoff date here. Or I'm going to be done in the spring, or I'm going to be done come, you know, Halloween, or whatever, you know, just whatever. Just pick an arbitrary cutoff date and stick to it. And when you get to that point, if the results you've been working for are not happening, stop. Because you might very well be wasting your time and your energy and your gifts on something that's not meant to be, rather than keeping yourself open to something more wonderful that is. Learning that lesson from my hoodoo studies was one of the most valuable things I learned, because some people can wind into a knot and obsess. And to be able to, you know, that's one way of being able to note it. In other traditions, it's consulting a wise person, it's divining, whatever it is. But to be able to kind of say, all right, time to stop. And time for you to do the work to move on to do something else is important to do. How you do it depends on your tradition, but I definitely think in terms of setting a cutoff date so that you can use your gifts and measure success in a different way. So,
okay.
Are we all still here? Okay.
The next question is.
I heard a noise in my phone, and I had a moment of uh-oh. But okay, you're all there.
Charles T. asks, what is the best way to evaluate the magical link? For example, the connective symbolic tissue and language that forms spells and leads to the cause we seek to employ. How can we effectively analyze the magical link's quality and character so as to optimize it?
Can you give me the timestamp on that so I can take a closer look at that? It's a lot of words.
Yeah. I lost the timestamp on it, to be honest. Here we go.
Okay.
1949.
It'd be 1849. Okay, hang on a second. I'm a time zone back. So. Magical link capitalized. I'm not sure what's meant by that. So.
I think what he's talking about, his next example was, will capturing a person's signature of a footprint be enough? Or do you need, like, bodily fluids in order to make a magical force in the world?
I'm back to being an anthropologist on that one. I'm back to being an anthropologist on this one. It depends on what your cultural tradition and your experience and it says, you know. It's something like hoodoo. There is a hierarchy of what sorts of links are more powerful than others, handwriting versus a picture versus effluvia and that sort of thing. But that's one cultural magical tradition. There's all sorts of different ones where you can gauge that and whether or not those matter depending on culture to culture to culture. So there's no one way to answer that question. And you're going to find me saying that a lot because, like I said, I'm an anthropologist. Cultural relativity is a thing. And what's a standard or truism in one particular cultural perspective is not going to be the same in other ones. So, you know, it's effective if it works. You know, some people get great results with handwriting on a piece of paper stuck in their shoe. Others need more than that. And in different traditions, they'll say, none of that works. You need this. That's always going to hang in the air, and I'm not going to come down strongly on one position or another precisely because of my anthropological training. And sorry, I'm no fun, but that's just the way it is.
It really does matter, though, looking at it through all of these different lenses to kind of come up with a holistic sense of, you know, what we're trying to accomplish, when our magic works, when our magic doesn't work, you know, and really kind of keeping in mind those cultural lenses when we're assessing these sort of things for ourselves. If you're assessing why didn't it work, are you assessing it through a lens of a hoodoo conjure practitioner, through a Wiccan high priest or priestess, through, you know, a druid lens, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, Native American shaman, a Buddhist, it's on and on. It really does matter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very personal to the practitioner decision for themselves as to what lens or complementary lenses they're using.
Yes. And I think a lot of the, one factor that I, you know, we didn't touch on as much as I would have liked, but maybe that'll be another show. The emotional investment in this, right? Yeah, your judgment has to be clear and your emotions have to not be cloudy, but when your emotional impact is focused and clear on your outcome, I mean, it blows a hell of a lot of things out of the water. But that might be another show. That might be another show.
Well, Reverend James, we have roughly a minute 20 seconds. Do we have something we can jump into?
I was trying to find, because I was back in the chat, so I'm looking really quick. Are mystic masters likely to become powerful magicians? There's much talk about siddhis, which are side benefits of spiritual disciplines, and the hermeticism, meditation, and all kinds of spiritual work are valuable to get what one wants or change so as to like what one gets.
If they want to. I mean, this is another six of one, half a dozen of the other question, really. Do people who are masters of mysticism, can they become great magicians? I guess if they wanted to. They want, if magic interested them. Likewise, can magicians become mystics? Sure, if they want to. I think the only limitation there is desire, really. And I don't, I think, frankly, scratch the surface of a magician, you've got a mystic. Scratch the surface of a mystic, you've got a magician. I think really they're brothers. It's just, you know, desire. What is it that you want?
You know, that is all the time we have for tonight. I hope you've enjoyed your time with us this evening, everyone. Until next time we meet, keep that magic alive. Take us out, Reverend James.
Thank you, Reverend Art, and thank you, Doc Murphy of RootDocMurphy.com in Paganistan for being our guest this week. We invite you to join us next week when our guest will be the amazing El Duval of WalkingWithSpirits.com and the fabulous JD of HoodooHouseDetroit.com as they join Reverend Art and I for our Reading Palooza number 2. We'll be giving live readings on air. You won't want to miss this. We've come to the end of this episode of Mystic Mages and Magical Places, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, on the LMC Radio Network. You can find Reverend Art at FolkConjure.com and at FolkConjure on Facebook and Instagram, on the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com, on readersandrootworkers.com, and on Hoodoo Psychics. I'm your announcer, Reverend James, joining you from FolkConjure.com in North Carolina. Mystic Mages and Magical Places can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and the shows are available in archive via mysticsmages.com/radio show and on the Lucky Mojo Forum. For all of us at Mystics and Mages, I'd like to thank you for being here, and be sure to follow at Mystics Mages and Magical Places on Facebook and at Mystics Mages Magical Places on Instagram for updates and news. We'll be back next week at this same time. Come sit a spell, wink, wink, relax and enjoy the show. We've only just begun. Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Thank you, Reverend James. Can't wait until next week. El Duval, JD, Reverend James, and myself. Get your questions ready. Drop some messages to the Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places website or Facebook page. And get us a little prepared for what to expect, and we'll get you on air next week. Till then, blessings, everyone. Have a wonderful night.